We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. I am super excited for my guest this week. He's pretty good at chess. He has been as high as number 14 in the world. He's currently slumming it at number 24 in the world. He's an eight-time champion of the Czech Republic, David Navarra. Mr. Navarra, thank you for joining us.
You are welcome.
So I really appreciate your taking the time, David. When we were emailing and setting this up, you mentioned you're going away for three consecutive events, chess events, in a few days. So where are you headed?
Okay, I'm going to play the French League now, and then several games in the Polish League, and then a match against the strongest or highest rated Chinese player in Prague. Not a Chinese player in Prague, but right. I'm going to play a match which is going to take place in Prague. And okay, so I will be quite busy.
So what's the format of the match?
We will play about 12 rapid games and three games per day. And if it's tight, then some blitz tiebreak.
Okay, and I should know who the Chinese number one is. Obviously, it's a short list of candidates, but who is currently Chinese number one?
Okay, I know it, but the problem is that the international pronunciation differs quite a lot from Chinese one. In the English transcription is Ding Liren. Chinese pronunciation is probably something like Ting Li Zhen or something like this, but somewhat different.
Okay, yeah, and he had a nice showing at the candidates, a strong young player, so it should be a great match.
Yes.
So how do you prepare for a match like that, David?
Okay, to be honest, now I'm not preparing for the match at all.
That's my kind of preparation.
Okay, I would like to, but on Friday I'm leaving for the French League. I'm going to play up to 11 games there. Then I will get back, go to Poland almost immediately, play three more games, and then get back, play a blitz tournament in Prague, and then play the match. So I'm not happy about this schedule, but it happens to me quite often during this part of the year. And this time it happened because I somehow promised to play the French League, and then I realized it was overlapping with the Polish League, unfortunately. So, and my club, who was the champion, or who is the champion, somehow disliked this because about 4 or 5 players from the club are going to play in France as well. So the and the schedule was changed, and Polish league takes place just after French league.
Okay, so busy life of a chess professional.
Yes.
So who's on your team in the French league?
Okay, my team is not the strongest, but okay, still quite good. There's, for example, Matthias Bliebaum of Germany, and Benjamin Gledura of Hungary. They are both strong grandmasters rated over 2600. And we have some more grandmasters, like Grandmaster Andrei Istatescu from Romania, who has been playing for France for several years, and also Grandmaster Andrei Sokolov, who once played candidate final, I think, against the Grandmaster Karpov in 1985, I suppose.
And so you said your team is not the strongest. Who will you be competing against? Anyone especially notable?
Okay, there are two very strong teams. One of them is Bishvila, and there are players like Shakhriyar Mamedyarov, Arkadi Naidich, Etienne Bakro, and several other very strong grandmasters. And then there is a team of Clichy, where there are players like Maxime Vachier-Lagrave, Laurent Freycinet, and several others. I mean, I just forgot to mention many more strong players. I just don't remember it by heart who is playing. I know Maxim Rothstein is also playing for Bishvila, and many other strong grandmasters for Clichy as well. So,
yeah, it doesn't sound like you're going to get many rounds off. You're gonna have to be sharp every round, I guess.
Yes, I mean, those players are playing for two strongest teams, and the other teams are not bad either. I mean, they also have quite strong grandmasters, and the top board is quite strong, and it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I do and don't envy you at the same time. The travel and the being as good as you are sounds good to me, but of course, being me, it wouldn't go so well if I played. So when you play this match, do you only play, I imagine, your first board for your team? Do you only play other first boards, or is it like a mixed schedule where you play different boards from different teams?
Okay, I mean, in each country, I can play just for one team. So I don't know if I understood your question properly, but as for
first board... I can clarify. Do you...
I mean, in Europe, during the season, we cannot change teams usually, but I can play in several leagues during the same season. So I'm playing in Germany, Czech Republic, of course, Poland, France, and so on. And in France, I might sometimes play on board one, sometimes on board two, because it's sort of flexible. I mean, if there are players with similar rating, up to a 100 point difference, they can switch places in the lineup.
Okay. So, yeah, what I meant, and I think I know the answer to this, but what I meant was just like as board one, you only play the other team's board one, right?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I know that's the more common format, but lately with the Pro Chess League and stuff, they've been mixing it up a little bit.
Yes, I mean, it's so in many leagues, but in France, it's sort of tricky because I can also play on board two this time. And for example, if some team is very strong, there are players who can play on board one, but also on board six. So exactly in France, it's somewhat tricky, but I'm going to play just one opponent, but we... It's determined before several hours before the match, but I mean the teams can change it up to some extent. I mean there is a difference. There is a limit of 100 rating points, and if the difference between the players is bigger, then the stronger player needs to play on the higher board.
Okay, so you don't know exactly who you're going to play, like which individuals?
I don't know.
Okay, so that makes preparation tricky, I guess.
Yes, okay, we will have several hours for the preparation anyway, but okay, still it's good that I can switch places with someone else perhaps this time.
And generally, when you're getting ready for a big trip like this with a bunch of high-level chess, how do you prepare yourself?
Okay, I'm trying to keep myself fresh, to solve some tactic puzzles and so on, to read some chess literature, to follow some elite events and so on, to analyze my games. And okay, during the tournament, I'm usually preparing quite a lot. So that's what I'm doing.
Do you have any favorite chess literature? Are you reading like periodicals or just reading the latest books, or what's your flavor of choice?
Okay, to be honest, nowadays I'm mostly reading the periodicals because I'm reading New in Chess, then one German chess magazine, then one Russian chess magazine, one or two Czech chess magazines, and altogether it's already five, and three of them in foreign languages, so it's also a sort of language training. But okay, I'm training my reading abilities and comprehension, reading comprehension, but okay, when it comes to speaking, I might sometimes be rusty anyway.
It's amazing that you speak so many languages. And actually, that calls to mind a question. What we do on this podcast, David, is for people who have supported the podcast, I send a list out. I let them know in advance who's coming on, and they can submit questions. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to have industrious supporters who not only submit questions, but point me to, like, you know, information. So I'm well prepared. Timothy Ha found a great interview that you did with Fiona in 2016 that I'll be referring to later, but he had a follow-up question based on reading that interview, which was, he saw that you read Russian, English, French, and Polish, and he asked why that choice of languages to learn. Sorry that you speak Russian, English, French, and Polish.
Okay, I can speak several languages, and in fact, my French is not really great. I mean, I started late and then sort of stopped, so my French is not really good, but okay, I can speak English and Russian fluently, even though you sometimes might doubt if it's fluent enough.
No, it's quite fluent.
And okay, my German is also quite decent. My Polish is not really bad. It's decent as well, but okay, it's a very similar language. Maybe not very similar, but still similar to both Czech and Russian. And okay, I can also speak some other languages, but rather badly. I mean, okay.
I don't know. I've done enough traveling to know that when a European says they speak a language badly, it's not the same thing as when an American says they speak the language badly.
Yes. Okay. I'm living in the Central Europe, which means that I'm surrounded by, okay, Czech Republic is surrounded, being surrounded by many countries with their own languages, and I'm playing quite often in Poland, so Polish language was sort of important for me. The same applies for German, of course. Okay, English is more or less obligatory nowadays, and Russian language is also a Slavonic language, and okay, it's very useful for a chess player to know Russian language.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, that was the one I studied in college, although my Russian skills are withering away. So do you think it's true? People say that there's a correlation between the ability to, like, talent for chess and talent for languages.
I don't know. I think it depends, because there are some players who know quite many languages. I think Sergei Movsesyan is one of the biggest stars in this respect, because he speaks about 9 languages, but
he
speaks without accent. I mean, he makes some mistakes sometimes in Polish, for example, because he likes practice, but he speaks without accent. He probably has some musical talent or something, but I mean, chess players are usually clever, and people who know many languages tend to be clever as well. But I don't know if there is any special correlation, because when I was 15, I could only speak bad English. Okay. What and I knew some basics of Russian, but okay. Since then, I became interested in foreign languages and achieved quite a lot. But okay, I'm no specialist. I mean, I'm just a person who likes studying foreign languages, who likes to study foreign languages. But okay, I'm still making mistakes because okay, I'm no interpreter. I mean, it's not my job.
Right. Okay. Well, like I said, I mean, most people would love to speak as many languages as you. It's quite impressive. But let's get back to your chess playing, because being at such a lofty perch, being such a strong player and having been around for a little while, you've played probably like every current famous chess player, I'm guessing. And I know that you had a match against Karpov. And of course, you had a very famous game against Kasparov recently. So when you reflect on your career, what are your fondest memories?
Okay, it's hard to say, but I liked some of my performances in team events like Chess Olympiads and so on. For example, I'm very fond of the fact that my team Nový Bor won the European Club Cup in 2013 ahead of Sokar, which was filled up with elite players. I mean, they had Anish Giri on board 7 and he was rated higher than me. I was playing on board 1 incidentally, but okay, I was not the most successful player of our team, but we somehow managed to beat Sokar, who was playing with Grandmasters Topalov, Caruana, Kamsky, Mamedyarov, Giri and Wang Hao against us. And I mean, we were not bad, but we were quite lucky in this match and we somehow managed to win the tournament. I mean, okay, we were lucky. Maybe some other team deserved the victory more, but in the next year we finished second and it was quite a deserved second place. So I'm fond of this. And also of, for example, my gold medal on board 2 at the Chess Olympiad in Istanbul 2012, which is probably my best result ever. But okay, there are more such results. I mean,
so it's interesting that you mentioned primarily team events. Do you find those to be like more rewarding?
I don't know. It's hard to say because I'm usually performing better in team events. I don't know why, because I tend to be an individualist. But okay, I like my teams. Maybe I'm taking that events more seriously. And as for individual performances, I could mention my victories or my shared first place in Mainz in Germany, where I played a big rapid tournament. There were about 750 participants, including some top players like Grandmasters Ivanchuk, Kamsky, Mamedyarov once again, Akopian, who was in top 20 back then, and Grishuk, and I somehow managed to share the first place with 9.5 out of 11. I even lost the last game because I became too nervous and okay, too surprised by winning the tournament or by sharing the first place. Okay, I once won European Blitz Championship, quite surprisingly, in 2014, and I scored something like 19 out of 22, which was great. And as for classical chess, which I rate higher than Rapid and Blitz, there were some events. Okay, I'm 8-time Czech champion. I mean, it was not easy at all because there are some strong players participating. I mean, it's not all of us, I mean, not all of them, but often many of them were playing. And okay, one thing is to win such a tournament where you are a favorite, and another thing is to win it 8 times.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's, and you're not that, you know, fairly young man. So hopefully you haven't won it for the last time.
Yes, I also hope I will win it.
When is the next one?
Okay, in 1 year, more or less. The last championship took place in Ostrava in May, and I was not playing because it overlapped a bit with Shamkir Chess in Azerbaijan, I mean Vugar Gashimov Memorial, where I performed quite badly. I finished last, losing 4 games and drawing the remaining 5.
Yeah, so, you know, the life of any chess professional is going to have ups and downs. When you compare something like your 9.5 out of 11 result that you mentioned versus things not going the way you would like in Shamkir, do you notice any patterns?
I don't know if there are any patterns. I mean, of course, the opponents in Shamkir were much stronger because there were about 9 players, including me, from top 20. Or maybe top 21, I don't know exactly. And one more player who was also rated above 2,700. So it was quite strong. And in such tournaments, you need to be perfectly fit and focused and so on. And when you are not, you lose some games and the other opponents will try to beat you then.
Yeah, they sense weakness, don't they?
Exactly. And in the Chess Olympiad, I was then exceptionally playing on board 2, which was not really weak, but still it was not the same level as board 1, because Viktor Laznička played against grandmasters like Nakamura and Adams then with black, which was tough, and he did well. And I played on board 2, and I didn't start so well. I think it was a sort of miracle, because I had some problems with before the tournament, and they somehow miraculously disappeared still before the tournament. But I mean, it can hardly be explained. And then I was playing, I was focused and so on. I didn't start particularly well, but then I won 6 games against grandmasters in a row.
Yeah, so you just kind of never know when a breakthrough is coming, I guess.
Yes, I mean, I'm a player who can win many games in a row, especially, I mean, against somewhat lower rated players, but still strong. But on the other hand, nowadays it's more difficult because the theory has progressed, and it's easier for the players who know the theory to make a draw with white if they want to, or it's more difficult for me to get some advantage or at least playable position with white pieces and to survive the opening with black pieces. So one needs to work harder and to work on the openings more than before, which is not something which would suit me. Also, the computers are quite strong nowadays, and I mean, I'm trying to keep up with the technological progress, but I'm always somewhat behind, not only in comparison with the absolute elite, but also in comparison with players rated about 2,700.
So
I'm in. Okay, my preparation is not that great. I mean, from time to time, I'm cooperating with my friends who are also strong grandmasters, and we can generate some ideas, but I mean, nowadays it's not no longer easy to win many games in a row.
So you've mentioned in previous interviews that since you were you had a quote in an interview where you said that since you were a kid, you your openings were a weakness of yours, so that got you used to playing poor positions, which I thought was funny and somewhat instructive that it's not all a bad thing. But now that you're, you know, now that you're an adult and, you know, one of the world's best players, how come? Is this like a weakness that you think you could correct, or is it just that you just don't like preparing for openings, or why do you think it is that others have better opening knowledge than you?
Okay, I even somehow learned to like the work on the openings, but okay, I'm saying it's a weakness which can be corrected, but it would cost too much effort or too much money or probably too much of both. Because, I mean, the top players usually have strong seconds who are working full-time for them, or not full-time, but quite intensively for them, and they are using some very efficient computers, powerful computers. And okay, I have just a laptop, I mean decent one, but I don't even want to buy a supercomputer because I would need to cool it somehow and okay, to place it somewhere. And I mean, I'm not all the time at home, and I'm not a player who would like to turn on the computer, go to bed, and in the morning wake up and see what the computer found. I mean,
yeah,
I'm
that's
not
intense.
Really used to doing this. I mean, I'm analyzing this computer quite a lot when I'm preparing, but that's just what I'm mentioning. I am analyzing with the computer. It's not the computer analyzing without me, and or if it is, when it is, then it's just a rare occasion. And I mean, I'm cooperating with some friends, but okay, I have a trainer, but we are not collaborating so much nowadays. We are not working together so much because my trainer, Grandmaster Jansa, who is 75 years old, is a living legend, and he is still very active and following the latest trends in the openings. But okay, still, he has also other work. I have also other work, and I mean, I'm not working on the openings as intensively as the others are, I suppose.
Yeah, that makes sense. I recently had Vidit Garaji, who's very close to your rating currently, and he mentioned a similar thing, that he felt like he had reached a level where if he wanted to go higher, he needed a team, and he was actually in the process of trying to raise money and put out feelers to make that happen, to put together the team. Yes. Did you ever consider doing something like that?
Not really. Okay, Vidit Gujarati is, I think, 12 years younger than me. I don't, okay, maybe not 12, maybe 11, I don't know exactly, but okay, he can still make a progress and so on. But okay, I have never searched for a big sponsor because I want to remain independent, say what I want to say, okay, I mean, I don't need more money. I think it's sort of strange that in the modern world, people who get the highest, the biggest support are often the richest people, which is sort of strange. I mean, I can live without a sponsorship. I can earn decent money, very good money compared to an average salary in the Czech Republic. Okay, it would not be so great money in the US, but okay, still I can make a living without any difficulties now, and also save some money for more difficult times. So I don't see any necessity in getting a sponsor. I mean, if I wanted to create a team, I could invest a big part of my income to do that, but I think it's not worth it. I mean, I'm not a player who would aspire to get into top 10. I know I'm clever, I'm talented, but there are more clever and more talented players, and okay, they will always play better than me, and they are also often younger than me, but okay, I can play against them, I can occasionally beat them, I can play many interesting games. Maybe my results against the elite is, I'm sorry, my results against the elite are not really great, but I played many interesting games against strong grandmasters who are not in top 50 or so, but still, I think those games are worth seeing.
Yeah, well, a lot of it, I get what you're saying, and it's great. I think you have such a grounded perspective, and you're very modest, and I have questions related to that as well. But one thing just that came to mind as you were talking about this is it's not, I'm sure with someone like Vita, from his perspective and from anyone trying to crack the top 10, it's great that that there's financial reward and, you know, probably exponential reward for going from saying 25 to number 5 in the world. But I'm sure, like, as a competitive person, it's not just about that. Like, to devote your life and reach such an incredible level where, you know, you're the best player in your country and, you know, only two handfuls of people in the world are consistently higher rated than you. So to me, and I think to a lot of listeners, it would be not just about the money, but just like trying to maximize your potential, or to just to see what would happen.
Okay, I know, but it's hard to say what does it mean to maximize my potential, because okay, if I didn't enter, if I hadn't entered university, I could have done better in chess. Maybe I would have got to number 10 in the world and then dropped back later on to number 20. But okay, now I have a master degree in logic, which I quit simultaneously with finishing my studies. And I mean, I had realized long before that I would not be a good logician, and I was not that talented in this field. I have a master degree, and if I sometimes decide to quit chess for any reason, I will probably be able to find some decent job, because, okay, I know some foreign languages. My knowledge is not perfect, and my speaking abilities need some improving. Need some improvement. But I more or less know how to formulate sentences. I just tend to be too slow because I lack practice. But I achieved quite something. And I could have achieved more in chess, but I would have achieved less in other fields. So it's always.
Yeah, it's good to have balance. I think it's commendable to be a well-rounded person.
I don't know. Sorry for interrupting you. I don't know if I'm really a well-rounded person. I think I'm not. But okay, at least I'm trying. And maybe some top players are as well, and they are better players than me. But okay, Levon Arogan is of course more talented than me, Magnus is more talented, so what can be done? I know I'm not the most talented and the most clever player in the world.
I remembered what I was gonna say, which is just your modesty is quite refreshing. It's just it's funny for me to hear someone who's so strong. Because the chess players often are delusional. Like, you know, throughout, as you ascend the ranks in chess, everybody thinks they're underrated. And here you are basically at the pinnacle. And you're so modest about your abilities compared to the handful of people who are higher rated than you. So I just wonder personally if it's possible. I know that you took the decision to go to university, and, you know, that gave you a more well-rounded education than someone that would go straight to college. But I just feel like you're scratching, you know, you're so close to the top that even, you know, in your 30s, it doesn't seem to me like it would be automatic that you couldn't ascend a little bit higher.
Okay, maybe I could, but I mean, it would cost me a lot of effort, maybe a lot of money as well, but okay, I would get the money back if I got to top 10. But
if you did, which is no sure thing, of course.
Yes, I mean it would require a lot of effort, and the Grandmaster Sosonko recently wrote that to get to the top, you need to put chess on the first place in your list on priorities, but on the second and third place as well. I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can't say for sure that I would probably have the same approach if I were, you know, at that level. But I was just curious because, like I said, it's refreshing. It's refreshing how modest you are. But let's talk about how you did get to be so good. So listeners to the podcast always want to know how they always want chess improvement advice. So do you think there's a secret to the success you've had?
I don't know. I think there is no particular secret, but it was something like a happy coincidence, lucky coincidence, because I mean, I have a chess talent, and fortunately I realized it, or I started to play chess relatively early at the age of 6 or 7, which is not so late for a player who doesn't come from a chess family, so to speak. I mean, my parents are not really playing chess. They know the rules. My father is a mathematician, so he can play chess without making big mistakes. But okay, my parents are not tournament players, not club players. So basically, what I wanted to say is that my parents supported me in playing chess. They invested a lot of time and also money, and I was also supported by some of my trainers, by Chess Union, and so on. And I was very lucky that at each stage of my career, or each part of my career, I had a very good trainer for that part of my career when I was growing up. And it helped me a lot. I mean, I was very talented and when I was very young, I didn't spend so much time on chess, but during the secondary school, I learned how to study, including chess, and it helped me a lot then. And I was sort of lucky in this respect, but it was not just my success. I mean, it is also a success of my parents, of course, of my trainers, also of Czech Chess, because Czech Chess Union also supported me quite a lot. I mean, they supported me because I had good results, not because of some sort of protection. But
okay. Well, but that's great that they supported the top players. So you mentioned that you learned how to study. What did you figure out?
Okay. I mean, I had to study, had to use my time optimally, or not optimally, but had to try at least at the secondary school, because I didn't have so much free time. I wanted to play chess well and to also study well. And I needed to use my time when going to the school. I'm traveling by public transport, and it might take about 40 minutes, so I was reading something, or rather studying something on the way, and also on the way back, which is already 1 hour 20 minutes. I'm a bit absent-minded, so sometimes I might forget to take the bus and sorry get off the bus and so on, but okay, it's not such a big problem for me.
Yeah, it's funny how many super strong players have that sort of absent-minded streak where you can just forget to get off the bus or miss a turn or be a bad driver. Like, I'm not a great driver. Not that I'm a grandmaster, but that's my excuse, that I'm a chess player.
Yes.
So did you have any books, or I've seen you mention a few books in the past, but do you have any books that you find yourself recommending a lot to aspiring chess monsters?
I like almost all the books of Mark Dvoretsky, a top Russian trainer who was very hardworking, and he developed his own methodics and his own method, and he was quite successful in his work. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, already 1.5 years ago, or almost 2 years. But he wrote many great books, especially his Endgame Manual is just great.
Yeah. But
Okay, most of his books are also not really easy to read. I mean, he constantly asks the readers some questions, but his choice of puzzles is quite good. His choice of examples, because there are characteristic for the topic, and at the same time, they usually have just one solution. And when there are more solutions, they are all instructive, or the example is instructive. So I quite like most of his books.
Yeah, his name comes up all the time. I mean, just an absolute legend. And we've had a few guests on, like Jan Gustafsson and Greg Shahady, who've had the pleasure of meeting him or working with him, and they all have nothing but good things to say. So,
Yes.
yeah. So, what about now? Like for your training now, what do you do? I mean, you mentioned reading periodicals, but if you're gonna like really try to push yourself, what's your preferred method for trying to work on your chess?
Okay, I like to cooperate with my friends among strong grandmasters, play some rapid games, analyze them, study some openings together. I think it's stimulating when you are playing against other strong GMs, and when you are also analyzing the games afterwards, it can help you to discover your common mistakes, or my common mistakes
Huh.
in my case.
Is there a strain to your mistakes that you notice? Is there one thing in particular?
Yes, there are several of them. In fact, I know about them, but I don't want to be too concrete in this. But
That makes sense. Yeah, can we know Magnus is listening and taking notes, so we gotta keep it secret. No, so I have another question from a listener. You've mentioned that in your interview with Fiona, I believe you mentioned that intuition is a strength of yours when it comes to playing chess. And Sanat Singhai asks, "Hi, David. I'm a very analytical player and try to calculate everything out and find moves that are logical. So I find it's hard to trust my intuition and sacrifice based on intuition. I often go for a complicated line that requires very accurate calculation when there's a simple move that will give me a great even winning position. How can one develop and trust his intuition in chess?"
Okay, I don't know exactly because, okay, I'm not a big trainer, but I think analyzing the games helps quite a lot. And I mean, not just analyzing with computer. I mean, like this line is good and the other is bad, but okay, one should also be able to make some conclusions, like that he overestimates the attack quite often, and to generalize it somehow, to get some feeling for the positions, for some, I mean, to realize when the attack might be enough and when not, for example. But okay, it's hard to learn something like this, because I think that in some cases, like that of Magnus Carlsen, it's inborn. I mean, he needed to work quite hard to develop his potential to the maximum, but I mean, he's obviously more talented than me, and more talented than almost anyone in this respect. I'm also quite talented when it comes to intuition, but not as talented as Magnus Carlsen. And there are also other players who are stronger in this respect than me. Of course, I know this, but I mean,
And I know that you've played Magnus Carlsen. Have you had a chance to analyze with him?
yes, a bit, but we mostly analyzed the games when we were about equally strong, and when we played the last three games, we analyzed one of them, the last one in Shamkir during the press conference. But okay, press conference is a bit different. I mean,
Yeah.
there are not just two people. And when we played 3 years ago in Vacanze, we exchanged several words after the game. I mean, Still, it was quite interesting for me because Magnus is much stronger, I know that. But okay, nowadays players are not analyzing the games as often as they were some decades ago.
Yeah, probably because computers are all knowing, so not as much reason to sit there and try to flesh out every variation. So having played, I mean, I'm sure you've played, like I said earlier, probably virtually everyone. Do you have any favorite stories, like, of maybe analyzing, like, I know you, like I've mentioned earlier, you had your match against Karpov many years ago, and you, of course, played Kasparov in his comeback. Did you have any memorable experiences analyzing, or like, getting a drink or eating dinner with any of these, legendary chess players?
Okay, it would take me some time to recall some interesting stories. I think I have some, but I would need some time. I'm sorry for my speech, distorted speech and so on, because I'm having a headache now, and I mean, normally I could speak a bit better, not much.
Oh, no, you've been great. So, yeah, if any come to mind, let us know.
Sorry. Pardon, I recall something.
Oh, good. Let's hear it.
As for those stories, I remember playing a match against Grandmaster Viktor Korchnoi in 2003 when I was about 18. And he was still playing quite actively. And I mean, he was rated slightly below 2600 at that time. And we played two games, and in the first one I saved was a rook endgame with white, and in the second game I won after some sacrifices, and then he was not very happy and left the playing hall after the game, and I showed the game to the spectators, and then he came back and told me that he should have played some other move. He was right, by the way.
Right, of course.
Hey, okay, I would play this, and the position would be unclear, because in my understanding, unclear means something like approximately equal and double-edged, but okay, it's just my understanding of it, and okay, he understandably didn't quite like the expression unclear, because it's somewhat alibistic, so he retorted only for you. So it was quite funny.
That's funny. Yeah, I know there's many stories about him being a little bit unhappy after a loss.
Yes, but okay, this was not a problem really.
Yeah,
I mean, afterwards we discussed the games normally, and okay, I mean, some people just get emotional just after the game. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you get to be a legend like Korchnoi. If the loss just rolls off your back, you're probably not gonna, you know, not gonna be a world class player.
Yes.
So I have to ask. I mean, obviously we're fascinated by all of the elite players, but playing Kasparov in particular and beating him, did you have a special feeling after that? I mean, I know there were sort of some unusual circumstances to how you won the game, but how did that feel?
Okay, I was of course happy, but I was lucky as well, because I understand and I understood even then that my position was lost. But okay, I tend to fight till the end in such positions, unless I'm in a very poor form. And this time I got lucky, because it happens, and it happens especially often in rapid chess and blitz, because when the clock is ticking and the timetable comes, even the strongest players in the world can make mistakes which might seem inexplicable from afar. But okay, it just happens to everybody. But okay, it was I was lucky that I won that game, and that I won it against such a great legend. But okay, I mean, I played that game like every other game in the tournament, but okay, with the difference that I mostly played badly in St. Louis, but I was lucky in this particular game. But okay, for me, it didn't matter so much, but for Czech media, it did. And
right.
I mean, quite some journalists asked me about this, and chess got into mainstream media, and I mean, it was quite good for Czech chess in this respect, because chess is not the most popular sport in Czech Republic. I mean, it's about 50 is more popular. So, okay.
Yeah.
In this respect, it was good. But okay, yeah. I mean, Grandmaster Kasparov is a living legend, but he had not played a big tournament for quite some time before that Rapid and Blitz tournament. So, I mean, of course, it would be something completely different to play such a position against Mr. Garry Kasparov at his best period, at his peak, and he would have won it, of course.
Yeah. So for those who haven't seen the game, it's a nice little trick, although I definitely get what you're saying in that, like, peak Kasparov would be unlikely to fall victim to it. But nonetheless, I'm sure it's nice to have the headlines about beating Kasparov, and they don't write in the headline, Navarro gets lucky against Kasparov. They just say you won. So that would be a nice thing to have written, I would think,
yes,
about you.
I'm not really boasting with this about this, but I mean, many people are asking me, and of course I'm replying to them like this, so okay. But I once used it when a friend of mine asked me to write to some authorities that he is a very talented player, which he is. So I needed to introduce myself somehow, so I wrote for the U.S. authorities that I once bet Mr. Garry Kasparov in a rapid game or something. I mean, not because I would like to make myself famous or something like this, but because it could help my friend to... I mean, the authorities don't know anything about me. I mean, if they are not playing chess, but all the people know who is Mr. Garry Kasparov. So
yeah, naturally, that makes sense. Okay, so David, I just have a couple more questions for you if you have a bit more time. Great. One is from supporter of the podcast, Keith Kaiser, who asks in his write-up on the Gibraltar Open 2018. He states Tradewise is ending its sponsorship of the event, and that the reasons are most likely to be related to Brexitus. Could he elaborate on this, and have you heard of any other chess-related consequences of the leave vote?
I don't know. I'm not a specialist in this field, but I'm not happy about Brexit, because European Union has many drawbacks, many problems, but on the other hand, it has ensured stability in Europe, or at least in Western and Central Europe, for many decades, and in Western Europe for 50 years, or even for how long. But despite of all of its problems, it's good when European countries can act together and so on. And I think, of course, I understand that Britain had some problems resulting from its membership in the European Union, but I'm afraid Brexit will not be good for the rest of Europe, probably not for Britain either. And for Gibraltar, it could be a big problem, because Gibraltar has a border with Spain, and some centuries ago it was a Spanish territory. And I mean, Gibraltar is a peninsula which is surrounded by sea, and it's only connected with the European territory because of this its border with Spain. So if Spain if the relationships between Spain and Gibraltar get worse, it might be a problem. I mean, if there is a border, it would not be good for Gibraltar.
Yeah. Okay, and follow-up comment from Keith is, remind David that he has a web page he hasn't updated since 2005. With the
I'm really sorry for this. Okay, I'm not really focused on it. I even, some of my friends even created a fan page and offered it to me, and I bought it, and it was another one perhaps, but then I didn't have enough time to work on it, because I'm playing my chess, but I'm playing many tournaments and so on, and I'm no expert at the IT, so I know I should do something about it. But
I'd say keeping up with your chess is more important, and we did hear what your upcoming schedule is, so it sounds like a valid excuse to me. But
yes,
but it is funny that it's still up. At least I checked it out. It's from when he was in university. For those for listeners. Okay, so last thing, David, you mentioned before we were recording, you might go out to dinner with your girlfriend tonight. What else do you do for fun when you're not thinking about chess? Do you have any other burning passions?
Okay, I like reading. I'm interested in sociology, because it was my minor at the university, but I haven't been reading much recently, and reading, and I'm interested in what's going on in the world, but I have no big hobbies. I'm not focused only on chess, but on the other hand, there's no other hobby comparable to chess. Okay, I like foreign languages, which is my big hobby, but recently I haven't been working much on renewing my knowledge, or on keeping my knowledge at least. So I'm afraid I will need to work harder, I'm not just working on chess all the day.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So David, again, I want to thank you for coming on. I mean, your modesty is really refreshing. I mean, I can't help but feel like you're too modest. I mean, you've achieved so much in chess. It's so incredible. So, it's nice to hear, but I hope you hold your head up high for all that you've accomplished in chess. And I really appreciate your time. If any listeners were interested in reaching you, are you on social media at all, or you prefer to keep a low profile? Where do you stand on
I prefer to keep a low profile, because it's better for me. I mean, I want to use my leisure time differently. I mean, I have a girlfriend, and I'm attending a church, and I like reading, and I need to help with some help in the household, because my mother is working and she is very busy, and I'm still living together with my mother, because I'm still not living together with living in one house with my girlfriend yet. I mean, we are walking out with each other for only 1.5 years or so.
That's, it's a long time. Okay, well, awesome. I really appreciate it, David, and good luck in all your upcoming tournaments. We'll be tuning in and rooting for you.
Okay, thank you very much. Goodbye.
The new Perpetual Chess theme music is courtesy of Geert Vandervelt. Special shout out to him. I also want to thank everyone who supports the podcast. That includes people who tell their friends about it, people who write positive reviews on Apple Podcasts, and most of all, those who have donated to support the show. I spend about 5 hours a week on each episode, and even though I love doing it, it can be hard to find the time. Without the support of my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual Chess partners, the show would not be possible. They are Adam Ralph, Adam Vrancouge, Adrian Gutierrez, Andres Krizdwa, I hope I did okay there, Andres, on your name, Alex Pejas, Chris Wainscott, Chad Hilton, Chris Lott, Christopher Wood, Coach J's Chess Academy, Chris Flanagan, Daniel Naylor, Daniel Schaefer, Gary Andrews, Greg Shahadi, James Benastia, Jason Dunbar, Jennifer Valens, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, Kelly Palmer, Krishna Gopalakrishnan, Lorraine Dore, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Matthew Tedesco, Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Sweeney, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchak, Robert Steiner, Tatya Vabrahamian, Thomas Stonix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotello, Victor Vrankul, Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. I'll be back next week with another great... Sports Social Podcast Network.